and we can sort of finish the diamond discourse. You understand that you're in, the universe is the diamond discourse. This is just a commentary on the diamond discourse. And I'm giving a sub-commentary on the diamond discourse. It's called a tika, a little something. Now, the next one's entitled The Integral Principle. What I'm suggesting, there's only two more sections, and that you spend half a day, for example, on just going over and over the one by one, pondering. That's it. You get glimpses, and then they're gone again. What was it I thought? You know, it's gone. And so there's a book it's published in mine, it's called Glimpses of the Mystical Life. That's about all you get at this stage. Just little glimpses. Where was it? I'm trying to find that creature. It's like a bird that's flitting through the forest. Right? Now you see it, now you don't. It's a bit like when I went with, when I was with Sir Peter Scott, you know. We were on an exploration of the Seychelles Islands. And one of these islands had a black parrot. A black parrot, which is a very rare parrot. And they dwelt among the coco de mer. So this island has these, and these black parrots like those. Mm-hmm. And parrots. So we went through, we were with some Aussies. Mm-hmm. Are any Australians here? Because this is verbal abuse. Okay. And there's nothing like a bunch of Aussies out in nature. It's like being with a flock of galahs. It's just non-stop. You may as well be with Americans. Talk out. Hi, Trav, you know how you do. And so we looked at one another, Sir Peter and I, James, there. This is not going to work. You go through the forest and you're talking. You see, yeah. This is true. Now, everything in the human voice just goes quiet because they want to hear what that is. Whatever nonsense you're talking, they want to hear it. Yeah. And they go very silent and apprehensive. Uh-huh. They are coming. You know, they're known to be predators. So everything crouches in nature. So we decided to go in another direction. We fell back, and then we saw a black parrot, but only a glimpse. Flutter in palm trees. We couldn't find it anymore. So that's like the first reading of the Diamond Sutra. A, you don't get it if you're behaving mentally, galahing. A galah, by the way, is a type of, say, a parrot or anything kind of thing. Talk. So you don't get it. So you have to go into solitude and so on. Then you may get a glimpse. So that's the great discourse on the galah. So we'll turn to this first integral principle. Subhuti, if a good man or good woman ground an infinite number of galaxies or worlds to dust, would the resulting minute particles be many? Subhuti replied, many indeed. Wherefore, if such were really minute particles, would not have spoken of them as minute particles. Yes, they were. For as to this, Buddha has declared that they are not really such. Minute particles is just a name given to the atoms. The atoms are to be used also minuter particles. The more you get, the more you could develop instruments. The more minute. But if you saw them directly, they'd be huge. So they're not minute particles. Mm-hmm. So it's just the observer. You don't know how far you are in size. In the universe, you have no size, basically. And this is a concept you should work on very much. Also, world honored one, when the Tathagata speaks of galaxies, of worlds, these are not entire worlds or the entire world, for if reality could be predicated of a world, it would be a self-existent cosmos. And it's not. It's integrated as an integral principle. You have to work on that mentally. It's all arbitrary viewing, arbitrary. You set imaginary boundaries. You set imaginary boundaries, you should work on that. But in fact, it's boundless. Behind all this, earlier in the Diamond Discourse, it refers to not clinging to this form, that form, sound, so on. Because that's also talking, that's clinging to form. And that's the Rupa Jhana level, even if you're in a state of ecstatic absorption and you see a beautiful vase or something, they can be clinging to that. In fact, students tell me about it years afterwards they had, right? You can see how it occupies their mind. Once upon a time, they were in the forest and a black parrot came, right? They can't capture the black parrot. The parrot of midnight. But they're still talking about it. They're in class talking about this black parrot. You see. But in any case, it's Rupa Jhana. You can be in ecstatic absorption, I'm not denying this. But what you don't realize is, in order to attain nirvana, or the attainment of nirvana, you have to pass through all the stages of the Rupa Jhana, and all the stages of the Arupa Jhana. And that's why the Buddha keeps pushing your mind towards super, here also, super view of beyond forms to boundless states, boundless, Arupa, no limit. And you have to bring your mind into the state of no limit. Spatial, no limit. Consciousness, no limit. Dropping the boundaries of thinking that there's a boundary to consciousness. Thinking there's a boundary to space. Thinking that there's a boundary to no thingness. Thinking that there's a boundary to neither perception nor non-perception. Consciousness or no consciousness. Perception, identification. So there's work on that. So you go through the Rupa, then the Arupa, and you go back down through the Arupa and up through the Rupa. This is going to confuse you. And at the end of going through again the form, letting loose form, then is the attainment of nirvana. It can be very technical. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 3, 2, 1, right? 4, 3, 2, 1, 1, 2, 3, 4, bang. Beyond the Big Bang. There's no limit to the numbers of Big Bang, by the way. But you have to experience four Big Bang. Torture. With dreadful thump, bang, a thunderbolt annihilates the rock of clinging view. And so part of this is, it's not merely an exercise in poetry. It's trying to get these massive worlds and imagine them being ground up to the atomic level, being made up of atomic and further down, quarks and subquarks and the vanishing, you see. That's why at the end of the empowerments, you get this Mahamudra, Maha, great movement. You need great movement to be occurring mentally. I mean that almost very literally. Maha Mudra. And Mudra is vanishing form. Just as if you were an electron microscope going further and further and further. As far as you can see. So there is that aspect, and that's why you practice taking the Bindu, universal symbol, right, everything down to the Bindu, and then the Bindu. So, as Holy was saying, 16th Karma was asked, what is enlightenment? Gone beyond concepts. Gone beyond viewing. And clinging to views. So as a preparatory for that, you could spend time grinding galaxies down to dust and building up also from dust to vast world systems. The whole process of doing that will grind you to dust. Because you can't grind an object to dust without the subject being affected, you see. And then you can build up, and then we will have the Mahalakshmi. Oh, big, very, very, very big. Poof. So you take your mind up, in a sense, or out, big, big, to nothing. Because it too goes, right? The galaxy is connected, this bone's connected to it, you know, and so on. It's bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until it disappears into the void, and the other goes more and more minute, disappears into the void. So you start practicing grinding galaxies. Cosmos, for if reality could be predicated of a world, it would be a self-existent cosmos. And of course, you know your quantum theory, etc., etc. You can only deal in probabilities, in predictions. And the Tathagata teaches that there's really no such thing. Cosmos, universe, unless you're talking Mahamudra, universe, one verse, not the universe. And remember that you are one verse. Just a verse. This life is just a verse. Cosmos is merely a figure of speech. Cosmic consciousness. Now, unfortunately, when I say cosmic consciousness, you will think big. Oh, I experience cosmic consciousness. When the real cosmos, please stand up, is beyond big or little. It's neither big nor little or measurement. Beyond measure balance. Beyond measuring balance. Then the Buddha said, Subhuti, words cannot explain the real nature of cosmos. Only common people. The word actually for common people in the old language is much better. Pathood means sticky lumps of dough. Sticky lumps. Pathujana. Unarisen dough. The word for mass of people, gregarious humanity, yeah, was sticky dough. They reinforce one another in their stickiness. Only common people fevered with desire make of this, make use of this arbitrary method. All of science, all of it, arbitrary. And they work at it, are biting at their arbitrariness. This is exactly what's going on. They sit here, right, trying to arbitrate their way to awakening.
Right.
Boundless, indescribable, actually indescribable, actually incomparable or uncomparable. But they will do it. That's because of their nature, not their real nature. Yes, sticky lumps of dark. So that's that. I don't know if I want to deal with the next one. Dear reader, you study it. I said as much as, well, nothing is said needed to be said. The riddle of existence cannot be elucidated by objective reasoning, which is essentially conventional religious concepts. For the Tathagata sees the triple world, this universe, if you wish, is not born, it dies not, it's not conceived, it springs not into existence. It moves not in a world, it does not become extinct, it is not real nor unreal, it is not existing nor non-existing, it is not such, not otherwise, nor false, and it's breaking all the conceptual views. I'm not even saying that your view of the universe is false. It's just a view, a description. With the best of little birds singing in the forest. It's like the empowerment of Nojoma. Oh, where are you today? How are you today? You know, it's just chirpy. You're chirpy. In the awakened mind, no laws are concealed. They're not concealed, you know. They're not to be discovered. There are no laws to be discovered. They are. And you have no assurance that the law, you know, the views of gravity have changed over and over and over and over and over. Whatever that may be called gravity is beyond the views. But they define and define and define and define it. And unfortunately, every time they make a definition, they think they made it more definite. Not so. They just made their views more definite. Oh well. Sages of all times and lands have realized that any fixed position which may be asserted as to the real nature of the universe can be refuted by dialectic, by debate. That's the truth. Dialectic, by the way, you should know that. If you were good Marxian, right? Historical, dialectical, materialism. That's how we get it. That is, in history, you have whatever thesis you put forward. You will see, for example, the capitalist class ruling, right? So there will be an antithesis, the working class trying to, right? But the society ends up as synthesis. Thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. And even that doesn't help you to enlightenment, but you will start in on that. You make any kind of a thesis you want, and in logic and argument, an antithesis. Well, what about so-and-so? What about so-and-so? Oh, well, then there's really a synthesis of these two. No. The synthesis exists before thesis and antithesis. You just have to jump it. Now you know, to be minds, you can work that one out. But describing what you can't do is describe the synthesis, because you will only do it in terms of thesis or antithesis. Conventional truth should be cut off. Wouldn't bother. Subhuti, if anyone should say that Buddha declares any conception of, well, I don't know about this word, ego, iti. Egoism. Do you consider you would understand my teaching right? No. I wonder if there's a word. Ego iti. Do you consider he would understand my teaching aright? No, world-honored one, such a man would not have any sound understanding of the Tathagata's teaching, because the world-honored one declares that notions of selfhood, personality, entity, and separate individuality as really existing, and we're talking permanency, are erroneous. These terms are merely a measurement, just figures of speech. Thereupon Buddha said, Subhuti, those who aspire to the consummation, and aspirations are built universally, I'd like to point that out, the bodhicitta, you don't get marks for having it. You know, you understand, you know, these thoughts spring up by the nature of the universe, right? You don't own them. Anyway, you should recognize and understand all varieties of things in the same way, as interdependent origination, flux, if you wish, without the ability to describe the nature of flux, so therefore it's no flux, and cut off the arising of views which are mere aspects, getting caught in aspects. And please understand that the different colors that can be seen in the diamond are mere reflections, they are not the diamond. Subhuti, as regards aspects, the Tathagata declares that in reality they are not permanent, they are only because the light's this way and that way and that way and that way. The diamond in itself does not have red or green or blue or whatever it is, mm-hmm. That's manifest. And yet it has the potential viewing, to be viewed in all manners. They're just called aspects. That's the end of the diamond. End of the diamond commentary on the Diamond Sutra. The sub-commentary on the commentary. And your whole life, you're making, what are you doing? You're making commentary. You're making aspects. Aspects. We're not even saying, in a way, it's just like cut off. They're already cut off. Just realize the cut-offness of it. All right. Now you may understand that enlightenment is effortless effort. So, have you any questions? In that sense, the Buddha teaching is undeclarable. It's merely by pointing out some aspect or aspecting that hints. But it comes down to that. And that's why this grinding of the galaxies down to finer and finer detail, pay attention to detail, is aspects. All dialectic, if you wish. All these aspects arise because of the nature of the freedom of universe in chaos. All aspects are possible. If we're set, then some are not, some are excluded. You really want to know your chaos theory. Understand that. In chaos, all possibilities. If it's not chaos, then there's exclusion. Yes?
Ramana Maharshi laid down when he was 17 years old, took a nap, and had a complete awakening.
Yeah. Well, I know an even better story. I went to see Sri Amir Baba, and Sri Amir Baba awakened by falling in the shit.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah.
Oh, he's meditating. And there's no sure way of falling in the shit than meditating. Yeah. I'm sorry, I mean, he had to shut up. Right? He was in like the state of bliss, and he jumped up over his mouth. So he made an effort to walk in the shit. You know, but at the moment when he fell in, he didn't realize. He was just, oh, it's gone. Then he realized where he was.
Right. Well, what is?
And he had. He took a bow after that. And I can understand it. Not to talk. So he used to have a blackboard. He sat there, and then everybody, you know, would ask him a question, and then he would write something, and then he would give it to. Kapya, right? The Kapya would read it, the response, and so on. And he had, they wrote them a very beautiful piece of music. Simon and Garfunkel, A Bridge Over Troubled Waters, mm-hmm. was dedicated to. But on the day I was there, there was a easy pride to be in. I had some musical background, and somebody came there who was a mere twanger on the guitar. I don't want to hear. And then he sort of composed a little bit of poetry, a little song. But it wasn't Bridge Over Troubled Water. It was Troubled Water Over the Bridge. And very nice. And then he wrote, "Oh, this is very beautiful," and this and that and the other. I think the teaching deserves some honesty here. That was another mess, and he should have said, "Try harder, son." You understand? But it was a nice idea. But anyway, that was that. And I got these, and you go out, and by the way, it was. Oh, you really should have seen this scene. There were ladies, and I mean in England, you know, there are ladies. With yellow sashes on. And they would sashay around. You understand? Welcome you. to I went by, and there was a book rack. I am God. And immediately, my Protestant background went, I don't know how you're going to get away with that. Anyway, so that was a visit to the guru. Ah. I asked the guru. Now, I know about gurus, yeah. So if you want it, you better start making the pillar.
You got work to do.
You got work to do, right? just sit here and chat. Anyway, so you got a couple of options: fall asleep or fall into shit. You got you that far. But it takes a lot of work to get there.
Yes.
Falling asleep is not so easy.
Yes.
But it's when you let go. And it's only when you really let go that you can turn the shit into or down. Manure, that you can see that aspects are just aspects. They're glorious, but they're aspects. And then comes the thought, what are the aspects? Mm-hmm. What's the title? Mm-hmm. Of all these manifestations, colors, forms, right? Beyond thought, the diamond. It's merely called the diamond. Simply because you can see all these aspects. If you could not see all these aspects, it would not be called the diamond. It would truly be beyond name. So that's that. So review, when imagery is used, I should point that out, like the seven treasures. You just think of build up treasures in your mind. You're building up, you know, jewels and this and that and the other. It's very strong karma. But that's arising yoga. And this is perfecting yoga. Then let go. And being strong in mind to be able to make all the positive imaginations, it's easier to let go than you know, misery and this and that. You find that out, by the way, that misery is very difficult to let go of. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whereas jewels, you can scatter them around, mm-hmm. dance in the high, mm-hmm. high fields like higher Griva. Mm-hmm. So where you see nouns like that, imagine it. You can create an imagination exercise. But we're speaking, so let's have some merit. So that's that. Idamte punyakamma asalakamma idamte punyakamma asalakamma idamte punyakamma asalakamma.